Welcome to episode 12 of ReWrap Podcast, where we talk about all things photo, video, mobile, and the creative lifestyle. My name is Jaron Schneider, and joining me, as always, is Karaminder Gooman, the master of portrait photography and more known for his amazing squinch abilities. Good morning, Karaminder.
Good morning. I want to reverse that, though. I want to, sometime in the future, I'd like to be known more for my work than just more my face.
Well, I mean, your squinch kind of went viral. It's hard to, I mean, not even my stuff is as good as your squinch. It's hard to beat that squinch, man.
I'm trying. It's not for lack of trying.
All right, so we have two small news items to go. I guess they're not small. Two news items.
Well, let's get this out of the way, Jaron. We actually just went over this story, and we had a bit of a gaffe in recording. I didn't call you out on it, but let's go through this again.
Yeah,
I like to be real. So,
speaking of, it's a Rode thing. Speaking of Rode, my Rode mic was not plugged into the proper input for that first recording. So we're doing this the second time. Let's talk about the Rode VideoMic Pro. So Rode released a second version of what is likely the most popular DSLR microphone in the past 5 years. Like, this has been the number one pick for anyone who wants to get a little shotgun mic for their handheld camera and get good audio out of it. The original version was released in 2010, so it was well due. So now the new VideoMic Pro is going to be available probably in the next week or so. You should see it in Adorama and B&H and Amazon and whatnot.
And what are the new features, Jaron? What's new about this compared to the old one? Does it make my old one obsolete?
It doesn't make it obsolete. It will be better than your old one, though. They did improve the quality of the audio that it gets, and audio tech does get definitely better year over year, and this is 5 years difference. So what they did is they increased it so it has higher sensitivity and lower self noise, so you get better audio capture with a wider dynamic range of audio capture. But the thing that's visibly different about this one is that they added the Rycote Lyre suspension system on this, and this is the last mic that I think that didn't have it. Every other onboard camera full-on microphone that they had going had this already, including the VideoMic and the VideoMic Go.
And what about the flagship stereo one, the stereo
yes,
mic?
Yes, that actually does. So the way that one's built is the Rycote is around the actual audio receiving unit rather than around the whole thing. So that thing is, that's one of the reasons why that one I think is so much more expensive is the way they had to develop that. But this, what basically the Rycote Lyre does is it floats the mic above where it's connected to. So if the mic moves around while you're shooting, it doesn't make noise while it's doing that. So it's able to better react to your movements and not clatter and ruin audio.
Yeah, and I think we talk a lot about like iPhones being used on productions for, you know, recording stuff. We're going to talk about that later as well. And so every single time I see a BTS video, there's always a VideoMic Pro on there capturing kind of ambient noise or just shotgunning. And you know, I feel like any photographer or videographer who's shooting video that's worth their salt has one of these. Jaron, do you have one of these?
I don't have one of these. So clearly I'm not worth my salt. I think this has to be Rode's best-selling mic.
Sorry if I set you up there.
You did, and it's okay. I have other video mics. I just don't use, to explain that better, I don't use shotgun audio that
it's
often.
It's okay. I have one, and I'm still trying to earn my salt. So there's a bit of that.
I just wonder how many of these units they've moved over the past 5 years. It has to be staggering. They had to have sold thousands and thousands of these things. So that's cool that they finally made a new version of it. That's probably going to be significantly better. I'd have to hear it for myself. But knowing Rode, they do make giant jumps in their audio production. So their stuff is going to be good. So
sounds like Rode needs to send Jaron a little gift from Australia.
I don't know if I'd use it. I don't use shotguns that often. I really don't.
That's right. You're a laugh man.
Yeah, and
he's
when I shoot my my documentaries and stuff, I'll use the like ambient audio, but generally I'm going to put music and voice over it. So
that's
really need this sort of thing. But I actually have a project coming up this weekend where I'm trying to mount a shotgun on it because I have to do that. So this will be like one of the only projects I've done where I must use shotgun. So
okay.
All right, so the next thing on the list is earlier, I guess it was late last week, or maybe it was earlier this week? First thing this week, whatever. The Panasonic announced a new camera, the G7. So this was on May 18th. So yeah, this is very early in the week.
Seven. Okay, this is a lot of generations of camera.
Yeah. So when this first came out, when you look at the specs very quickly, it can appear that this is going to cannibalize the GH4. I do not believe it will.
I think it's more like, I guess there's lots of specs to go through, but I think just to gonna quickly summarize from what I perceive it is, and you can correct me, Jaren, it's like GH4 Lite.
Yes. And Panasonic is putting a lot of eggs in this 4K photo basket. And do you know what 4K photo is?
It's when you shoot video in 4K and then you decide that you want to pull a frame out of that 4K, and then that becomes just the photo.
Yes.
An image.
And one of the other things, and they have these constant, if you've ever been to a trade show, Panasonic always has this up, and they've had it for the last year. They've got a partnership, I think it's with Flixel, and they'll have the moving picture sort of thing. So you take,
Cinemagraph.
Right. You'll take the video with 4K photo and then easily make that cinemagraph because it's capable of doing that quickly.
Yep.
And I think the 4K photo concept is interesting. I don't know that the cinemagraph thing is actually like a sustainable practice. Like, is that going to go anywhere? Are people going to hang TVs in lobbies and stuff to make use of those?
You know, it's so, Jaren, in our own backyard here, San Francisco, I went to, and I actually never really went there before, but it's been there a long time. The Clift Hotel has this lovely bar on its, the lobby floor, the ground floor. And in there, they had these portrait TVs, you know, with a frame, very low-key, but there's these people that just sit there like as if they're sitting for a portrait, but they slowly move. And I thought that was cool. It's so cool.
That is cool, but yeah. How many places can you actually do that? Where
not
it's
many,
like,
but yeah, I feel like it's not
super small market.
It's almost like an evolution of the GIF, or GIF, however you want to say it.
Well, with Flixel, it is that. It's basically that. You can export them as,
yes, you can.
Unfortunately, the proper way to say it is GIF. I hate that, so I'm going to call it GIF.
Yeah, I'm a GIF boy.
Yeah, I don't even care that it's not proper.
I'm an Indian GIFer.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know. It's made it up either.
It's just weird to me. I think the placement of where the GIF fits in our day-to-day world is for memes and reaction things and showing one thing out of a video quickly on Reddit. That's the kind of place where those things succeed. But to actually make one like in your living room or in a hotel lobby, I can see maybe commercial businesses do it. I can't see, and this is why I'm confused with this, is they're putting a lot of that 4K photo concept. This is definitely a more consumer-based camera. This is a level down from the GH4, which is, I would say, their pro-level camera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
this
giving...
This is like their entry-level... I don't know, would you call this like equivalent to like a Kit? Sorry, not the Kiss. The Rebel. Well, Kiss is the European brand for it, the Rebel. Oh. But like a Rebel. Like that Rebel
I think
line-ish.
It's a little better than the Rebel. And I think it's like if you would equate a Rebel to the other side of who maybe I want to get into video, then I would shoot on the Panasonic rather than a Canon. If I wanted to get into photo, I'd probably get a Canon, that sort of thing. Like there's the two ends of it because this video is definitely going to be a hell of a lot better. I just think it's weird that it's a consumer level camera that has this 4K photo / cinemagraph feature in it that won't be used by anyone
Jaren,
at the
hold
consumer
on.
Level.
I should correct you for a second because the 4K photo is not a cinemagraph.
No, but that's built in there. Like it's in the concept is in there. That's where they're using it when they show it off at trade shows. Is that
right? But how you make cinemagraph is that you take like this little piece of footage, maybe you know 10, 15 seconds. You go into the software of Cinemagraph Pro. But I just made a couple cinemagraphs in Vegas with my Leica M shooting 1080p. Like you could use any specific part of video.
Right, I know that, but Flixel has a relationship with Panasonic, and they're specifically, like when I go to their show, they're like, you can shoot 4K photo and look at this cool cinemagraph you can also make with the same feature sets and that sort of crap. So that's what I'm saying. I think the messaging is weird. The 4K photo is neat. We're actually going to have this camera in the hands of one of our writers who will be shooting this in Indianapolis at the Indy 500 this coming weekend, and he's going to do some tests with that and see how he likes the 4K photo. And also, we're going to look at the quality of the footage that comes out of this thing and see how it stacks up against the GH4. I imagine it's going to look identical to the GH4. It's probably going to look a lot like that same handheld sensor. Lumix you had.
Yeah, I was thinking about that and kind of how it fits in this relationship. And it's very much where the handheld Lumix that Jaren is talking about is the LX100. Thank you, Panasonic, for letting us play with that. I took it with me to India. And I shot some video with it. I shot some B-roll of actually the Lily flying drone friendlier drone thing that we just published.
It's got to be one of our top videos ever made, by the way. That thing
it's
got over 100,000 views now.
Yeah, and so I shot B-roll with that, and you were impressed with the look and the quality of it.
Yeah, it looked good.
Yeah. So the only difference is the LX100, you cannot change the lens.
And you can't put a mic input either. But this has both those. You can change the lens and put a mic in it.
And then if you wanted like some more heavier duty features, like this doesn't have like 96 frames per second.
No, there's no variable frame rate on this thing.
No.
And I don't know if it does true 4K either. It might. It probably
does. I don't think it does cinema 4K is what you're asking.
Yeah. I call it true 4K because it's actually the 4, which is 4,000, is actually involved in that one.
Meaning the X width is 4,096 pixels wide.
Right, instead of 38 something or other.
3860, yeah, and the LX100 is 3860 as well. So if you really want to go, like, you want cinema 4K, GH4 only. GH4 only. Not even the Sony A7S does cinema 4K. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Thank you. That's good to know. Now I'm really happy with my GH4.
And you know, there's a couple iPhone 4K video recording apps. Like one's $10, one's $50 right now on sale, and they do the 3840 no one does a cinema 4K like that I can see. I think you have to really step up to like GH4, or I don't even know if the Canons do it. I'm sure the Reds do it.
I know that the C300 Mark II definitely does cinema 4K. I know the 4K. Reds do. Yeah, but we're talking a huge,
you got to step up to these massive cinema cameras.
Yeah, we're massive changes in price here.
So like Panasonic's the only one giving us stuff. Like he's like Panasonic's Robin Hood. And they're like, you don't have to buy this multi-$1,000 camera. Panasonic's voice, that's in my head. You don't have to buy these multi-$1,000 cameras. We're just going to give it to you in this small package here.
And for some reason, they went
the industry.
Lightly Texan. Four other little things to mention about this camera is it has new memory card compliance, UHS-II, SDXC, SDHC. It has a maximum of 1/16,000th of a second high shutter speed, which is
damn, insane. Jerry, if you talk any more like that, I'm going to change my pants.
They say it has connectivity with smartphones. That actually has a huge use case. I'm going to go more into that next week after I test something, but that right there is sweet. And then they have this new thing called Creative Panorama, which the function allows shooting horizontal/vertical ultra-wide panoramic images by shooting sequent pictures easily.
It's done it, Jaren. Over the top.
It stitches them in camera, I guess, so there's that too. But with the new Lightroom features, we're doing it in Lightroom. I don't know how incredibly useful that is. If that's by itself, I don't think that's a major selling point. But with this other stuff, it might be cool. So we'll have more information on the G7 after our guy gets some shooting time with it this weekend.
So. Yes. So now you, of course, can make lovely, lovely, you know, movies with this new camera. And by the way, the price of it, Jaren, they don't have a body-only price, unfortunately.
Get it with a lens, but I think it's like $10.99 or $7.99, something cheap. It was $7.99 for the 14 to 42 millimeter kit lens and $10.99 for their 14 to 140. So it's cheap.
It's very reasonably priced. But what if you just have an iPhone in your pocket and like a company like, I don't know, Bentley decides that they want to tap you to make a video?
What a segue. Like,
thank you. You're welcome. I told you I changed my pants. I got inspired. And then, so what if you just had a little iPhone? You know what? That actually did happen. It's happened for the second time. Bentley has now come out with another, I guess it's an advert. It's just a little featurette, really, about their Intelligent Details series about bespoken, not suits, but jackets. Bespoken jackets. Driver's jacket. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. What do you think? You saw this video, Jaren. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Apple sent this over to us to take a look at because they knew we had already very much enjoyed the original Bentley video. And this one is called Intelligent Details was the first one, and the second one is Bespoke Driving Jacket. And they changed their shooting style with this one because they had new cameras to shoot with this one too, because this one that came out, I guess it was been over a year, hasn't it, since the original one?
Yeah, the original one they used iPhone 5Ss.
This one they used the 6 and 6 Plus. And they also had like this anamorphic lens adapter made by a company called
Moondog Labs, who used to be a Kickstarter project. We're going to talk a little bit more about that.
We'll go into that in a second. But they shot this basically in the same style as they shot the other stuff. And I'm seeing they also use like this little Joby camera grip thing that has a tripod mount on it to keep the camera inside of their stabilizer. They shot it all really well.
They used an Amovi M5. Come on, Jaren, details.
I mean, it's okay.
The Movi M5 is a big deal, I think.
Why?
Because Okay, how much is a Movi, Jaren, for stabilizer, a three-axis gimbal stabilizer for
cameras? I feel like the Movi is like $3,500, isn't it? The Movi M5? Yeah. Well, I mean, the Ronin M is $1,300. It's the same thing.
And now we're going to talk about that too. Well, because Jaren, what do you have in your living room right now?
It's like right next to me, the Ronin M, which I'll be testing this weekend.
Literally just walk over and hug it.
I could, but I don't want to leave my mic. Anyway, back to this thing. I thought this, I don't know, I was distracted by one major element. You like this a lot more than me.
Oh my God, Jaren, I'm so excited to tell you about this. But I want you to finish what you need to say, and then I'm going to
one thing is they missed focus on one shot in their thing. One interview shot to me was, which is one of the ones they opened with, and they missed focus pretty badly and got the background and not the actual guy. And I don't know how that happened, but it made it hard for me. I'm a huge stickler for details like that, and it made it hard for me to watch the rest of the video knowing that that was there. But you were able to look past it, so why don't you tell me about why you liked this so much?
I didn't even look past it. I didn't even notice it. Jaren's saying it's like it focused pretty badly, and I'm like thinking, what are you? How slow did you watch this film? Like
I watched this film at normal speed,
and I just. And I watched it like a few times because you said that there's a shot in there that it was out of focus. And I kept watching. I'm like, why am I not seeing the shot? And then I asked you. And then I'm like,
one minute and 24 seconds. You can see it.
And I'm like, well, that's not that bad. It's just quite usable. And I guess, you know, I even downloaded the video to watch it in like 1080p because I thought maybe it's web compression. And, you know, smaller resolution, you don't see it. And it definitely does not break. Like I've seen like Hollywood films with a couple shots with more badly missed focus that they use shots for because it still kept the story going.
Yeah, and I think that's why you like this, because you really liked the story. You've watched this video multiple times and you've just been so excited about it.
I am very excited. One is it's like this lovely bespoke detail's history. It's English. I'm English. I feel it's people who love and put craft and care into what they do. It's interviewing people like them, and I love their attitude. I love the way they speak and say about things, and the way this was shot as well. I really enjoyed that they have these moving shots. They have color B-roll. If you ever noticed, the whole video is done in black and white, except for when they do shoot the garments that they're in color, and it's done very well. I'm in love with this. I wish I could be a part of this or shoots like this or, you know,
Question with this, and I do agree that the product they've made and the way they shot it is all great, but they're really putting a lot of emphasis on having shot this with an iPhone and iPhone 6, and that's great that they did.
Jaren, wait. Are they? Because it was only until the very... You wouldn't have not known this was shot with an iPhone 6 until it's a 6.5-minute movie. 6 minutes, 6 seconds in, they say, shot an iPhone 6. Otherwise, before that, they don't say anything.
But that's common with a lot of iPhone like stuff, especially like if it comes straight out of Apple, they'll get you excited about the product, then kind of remind you, hey, by the way, we shot this on an iPhone.
But this doesn't come straight from Apple.
No, it doesn't. But it follows the same concept of how Apple does their marketing.
Well, yeah. At the very end, it's like shot on iPhone 6.
My only thing is, did they want to shoot it on an iPhone, or did they do it because they knew that it's uncommon to make things on iPhone and therefore it would get media buzz behind it? If they shot this with regular cameras, would it have gotten less media buzz? Probably. I bet if they shot this with a normal camera with a normal crew, it would have gotten less buzz. But because they shot it on an iPhone, they're like, we can get more going. We can get that media out there if we just say, hey, we shot this on an iPhone. That's why I think they did it, and that's my opinion. I think they did it because they thought it would come off as gimmicky. Now, the thing is, I think that shooting with your iPhone is totally possible to do beautifully. You have proven this to me, mm-hmm. and you have made me think that's great. Now, I was just talking to an Apple rep about this, and the reason I like shooting with an iPhone is because you can stay small. That gimbal we tested from iCan, that thing blew my mind. But
yeah, you hated that thing at the beginning. Now you're like, how do we get one?
Exactly. So, and the reason I like that is because it's small, easy to use, and quick. What they've done here is they've taken everything that makes shooting with an iPhone great and totally ignored it. They went and made this complicated by putting it with a bunch of more complicated stuff you need bigger cameras for generally. So why didn't they shoot this in the true iPhone style with small little things, with very few add-ons, and do it the way you should do it if you're going to shoot with an iPhone and iPhone 6 Plus?
I think it's filmmaking in general, and I think using an iPhone, using apps, and you're saying making it more complicated. I don't think it's making it more complicated because they're just adding like whether it be a anamorphic lens on top or a wide-angle lens.
It's the fact they stuck this on a Mobi.
Yeah, stick it in a Mobi. Yeah.
That's not necessary. You have the iCan gimbal, which would have done exactly the same thing, a lot smaller and a lot easier.
Well, I'm guessing they have some sort of relationship or rental house.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Not like, the iCan, because I don't think the iCan is very widely distributed or even in rental houses.
No, it's definitely not. And the thing with me is I just really think if you're going to shoot iPhone, you should shoot iPhone in the way shooting with iPhone was designed to be done, which is run and gun, simple and small, which is not what they did here. That's all I'm saying. Like, I would have been more impressed if they made a gorgeous film with basically three pieces of gear, including the phone the guy whips out of his pocket and sticks on like the iCan. That would have really impressed me. Instead, for me, this was less impressive than the first one we ever saw because it's been done before and they didn't do anything that was particularly fascinating to me. I like the story. I love the video they made. I just think that they covered the iPhone in things that it didn't need to be covered in.
I think they made a better product, but I know that they use more stuff here than they did in the last video. And I think the story here, Jaren, is more, we've made this beautiful video, and at the end, we've used a device that is accessible to everyone, that everyone has in their pocket. Now, yes, they modify it, they use it for filmmaking.
Right, but would
if you're
going
to do any filmmaking, you're going to use a tripod anyway.
Right, but would that message have been stronger had they actually used gear everyone had easy access to?
I think it would have been stronger. What's the message?
The message is anyone can make something beautiful with an iPhone. That's the message.
Yes.
And I think that could have been stronger if they used gear that sent that message.
I can see your point of view.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Jim.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Jim. But I'm also not slightly completely agreeing with you either. And
that's okay. I'm just saying that's my feelings behind this. And I love that you can get great stuff out of the iPhone. I just don't think you needed to cover it in all of this stuff that they used in order to get that great stuff.
Well, the only reason we heard about this is because, I mean, it's released on the W.O. Bentley, which is World of Bentley, I believe, YouTube channel. And then they also did actually a behind the scenes, whereas before the previous video, they put the behind the scenes at the end of the movie. Right. This, they actually made a separate movie about it, just showing some of the gear and stuff they used. And I went to the actual filmmaker's website. They had a little blog post about it, linking to some of the stuff they used. And yes, there's kind of a double exposure of, hey, the Mac community or even Apple community or iPhone community is going to pick this up of like, oh, it's an ad shot on an iPhone. Besides Apple, I can't think of another brand that has done this, shot a commercial on an iPhone. You?
Besides Apple shooting their own commercials, yes, and then Apple. These guys making a commercial with an iPhone.
Yeah.
Besides, I could swear there was like one more, but yeah, no, it's not common.
Okay, it's not common. So because even if it's not common, that, yes, lends itself to being a novel thing and it would give it definitely more exposure in the kind of behind the scenes thing. And I also think people who tend to, let's say, are part of Apple communities. Oh, there was a long story long time ago, a couple years ago, where one airline site showed higher prices to Mac users than they did to PC users. You remember this?
Yes.
And I'm thinking maybe it's something along that thinking or along those lines of that, you know, this demographic, this market appreciates things like good design and maybe have a bit more disposable income. So, I mean, a lot more disposable income if you're going to buy a Bentley. But right. But I can understand, like, obviously don't drive a Bentley, but I really like and respect them. And
so you're saying when they made this video, they were talking to their audience. That's what you're basically saying.
I believe that is part of it. I don't think it's a complete answer. I think it's part of it. It's like, oh, it's a bonus. Let's do this. Yes, of course.
Yeah. I think in their mind, yes, for Bentley, they needed to speak to their specific audience. I mean, that's why it's about a driving jacket, which I don't own. And then
but you could own.
I could own if I had disposable income like that. And I also think the other edge of it is they knew they would get more exposure by making it on an iPhone because it makes it novelty, as you said earlier. It's novel to do this because not many people are doing it. And I think both of our arguments that we're making here are very, very true. I think that what you're saying is right on point, and I believe what I'm saying about it being over the phone being overwhelmed by the stuff it's surrounded by and that being kind of not in the spirit of a mobile iPhone photographer.
Right. But I also do believe, Jaren, like I was, you know, watching the B-roll of the sorry, my voice is, I'm done dying.
Your voice is giving out on you there. I'm going to have to prevent you from talking any further.
I do believe in your point of that, you know, they put it in the movie and they have all these big device apparatus things that corral the camera. And so it doesn't, the iPhone does not get to behave like its strength, which is being very small and run a gun. And I think I'm with you in thinking that, let's say they didn't have a Mobi, that they did have the little iCan handheld gimbal, that would they be able to make maybe even better B-roll shots, maybe even more unique B-roll shots that only lend itself that only lends itself to using an iPhone? I do believe that.
Yeah.
And I believe
that's why I don't think this video is truly in the spirit of those who want to make films on iPhone.
But best of both worlds, I think, is just to have the Imovium 5 and using. Oh my god, I'm going through puberty. I think having both on set, like the iCan and let's say Ronin DJI.
Yeah.
Ronin M. Having both of those then gives you the options to play with both, and I think. Like, I still have, when we play with the iCan gimbal, we did not even get a chance to put on external lenses.
No, which I'm sure it could take.
Yeah, I'm sure it could take it too, but that's where I want it to be. And one other thing was, I remember when having the iCan, I'm like, I can't just use this one piece because I can't capture audio this way. I can't, like, mm-hmm. have this wire dangling off the iPhone to capture audio, whereas I'm looking at, like, a BTS shot and they do have cabling to where the handle of the Movi actually has the VideoMic Pro on it, so that kind of stays steady, and it's not connected to the camera. I guess it's maybe being recorded independently, but
yeah, that's how I would do it. If I was shooting this, I would record audio separately and then sync it later.
Yeah, so which is
you wanted to mention one last thing about these anamorphic lenses. There's two ways of doing it.
Oh,
the
yes.
way that they did it, which is they slid it on the front of it, and there's also like the way that you can attach it to with like the Schneider attachment.
Well, so Moondog Labs, the guys who they make an anamorphic adapter for the iPhone 5, 5S, and now for the 6 and 6 Plus, and which is, you know, then it gets me thinking, like, okay, it's like $160 for the iPhone 5 one, $175 for the iPhone 6, but I'm gonna upgrade to the obviously iPhone 6. S is coming out. I don't know any details. I just imagine it's going to be the iPhone 6S because, you know, history repeats
because
itself.
Of history, yes.
And then what happens when the iPhone 7's out, Jared? Then what happens to my $175 lens? And then what's nice about it, when I went to the website, they have this, the same lens, the 1.33x anamorphic adapter, but for the iPro lens system. Now, what is the iPro lens system? It's made by a company named Schneider Optics, you know who could be a great expert at this Schneider Optics is Jaren Schneider.
I actually went and saw them at NAB and they thought that was funny that my name was Schneider.
Did they give you any favorable treatment? Because I totally would if I was there. Like, oh my god, you have to like embrace our stuff and love our stuff. And
every
be
time
evangelist.
I run into a company that shares the name, I'm like, god, my dad should never have sold that company.
Yes, that's a total your dad joke. Your dad does it all the time to you. I love it.
There's a trucking company, Schneider Trucking, and he doesn't say, I should never have sold that company.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, yeah. What I'm saying is,
I'm hoping, let's say, I think that's a better investment. Still the same price, $175, and it uses the kind of a bayonet system. Is that right? Yeah. Bayonet? That's not the right word, is it, Jared?
Yeah, that's right. The bayonet means it attaches to the front of.
The bayonet mount. And so... buying that is a good, I would think, for future-proof investment because you hope that Schneider stays in the game long enough to keep making, say, cases, which they did with the 5. Now they've done with the 6. Hopefully they'll do with the eventual.
And you're saying that the cases 7. Will be more easily adapted. Like, you can afford those more than you can afford continually buying lenses and the lenses
sitting around. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And actually, you know what? That's a good point. Afford is a good word. So let's go for the iPro iPhone 6 case. And let's see how much that costs. You can fill in while I look this up.
I was unprepared for this.
But the point being, Jared, is that, you know, they also make nice. Just Schneider makes some great lenses as well. They make like the wide, the telephoto, and of course,
it's just smarter to get the stuff where you think it's going to have the higher likelihood of being adaptable and modular over time than going with one that you're almost positive will not be. Growing with the same intent, like with the same way, like you to get just one that only fits on the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus is less smart than getting one that has the at least chance of adapting over time. That's what you're trying to say.
Unfortunately, Amazon doesn't have the 6 one yet, but I know their website does. But they do show that they got one for the 5, for the 4, and for the Samsung Galaxy.
So their history is showing that basically you should invest in them because they're going to continue to make them for the phones that keep going.
Yeah, and they have quite a few wide ranges of lenses. Actually, now I'm looking at it. You know, they have the tripod adapter for the whole system. They have a macro fisheye telephoto. So it's the wide.
Sweet.
Which is good stuff. Yeah, so I think that's a much, like, this I feel like these things, like, being, okay, fine. iPro, now the bayonet mount is now going to be a, hopefully, something I can rely on to invest in iPhone glass and actually make do something legitimate, whereas as opposed to, you know, when the body changes and it's disposable, which has happened to my really right stuff iPhone 5 case, which I love.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I have used that before. It's nice.
And it's nice, and it touched. No, it's not usable on my iPhone 6 at all. And they didn't. They, you know what? They decided not to make one for the iPhone 6, or they haven't released it. And it's now it's over a year, almost a year now, yeah. And it's a bit probably useless to me of all the accessories. And I spent like, I don't know, $250+, even more than that. I think close to $300 just invested in that, and now it's useless. It's useless.
Completely well, on useless. That note, let's let's move on to the next thing. This was something you wanted to talk about, so I'll let you introduce this, USC's selfie class.
Yes. So I actually found out about this from a friend of mine, and she sent me this article on the BBC website, which is saying, leading university offers course on selfies. And then I like went through and actually clicked through. Oh, it's the LA Times that covered it. And this is interesting because, okay, let me tell you the name of the class. It's USC, all right? It's called Writing 150, : Writing and Critical Reasoning, Identity and Diversity.
Go on.
That's what it's called.
So it doesn't have actually the word selfie in it at all.
No. But the word around campus is it's hashtag selfie class. That's kind of, that's what they call it. But it's about, it's kind of interesting, Jen, because they've touched on something here. It's
psychology.
It definitely is. It's they want in the class they examine race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, sexuality, and gender, and this is all being communicated in the form of, say, selfies.
I actually think this might be the first time I approve of something with the word selfie in it, and it's because this is.
But it doesn't have the word selfie in it.
No, but you know the idea of them going. One of the one of the possible things to write about was how. What does your selfie say about you? Like, then you could critically think about exactly what are you, what is someone saying in this picture they're taking of themselves and why are they saying it?
Yes, that's exactly right. So not only is it just about the selfie itself when, as it's being taken, then the other half of it, because it's a process, right? It's like, okay, first you generate and then it's consumed. The consumption side is a quote, except that's only half of the process because these photos then will be read, liked and favorited and interpreted by others based on their own expectations and experience. Here we have the co-creation of identity wrapped up in a discrete act of networked communication, end quote.
I feel like the papers that could be written and the arguments that could be made by students will eventually all kind of say the same thing, because I don't think anyone takes a selfie to show anything but a few choice emotions. They're always going to be done in a way to either best show yourself or to garner sympathy. You want to show off on social media, or you want people to feel bad for you. Those are, and more often than not, it's to show off or to you make this statement of yourself so that you can hide how unhappy you are.
I can understand that. I think that's part of it, but I do think there's more to it than that. Like, I
see, and this is what students would probably be talking about in their own discussions. Like, that would be my argument. That would be my paper. Your paper be?
And that would, I think, there's that. But also, I think it's, my paper would be much more, you know how we talked about the evolution of communication, which is photography, which is even taking photos with your phone. Mm-hmm. I think that there is something to the nuance of a selfie, of where you are, how you take it, your expression. You know, I'm a big expression person. And also the things you choose to be in the frame, whether it be other people, other friends, things with you. And I feel like even the way I Snapchat, because I'm I always feel like I want to help or explain or want to walk along the viewer is what I'm doing, and it's a camera based on my face, so it's not necessarily a selfie by of itself, but it's a little video selfie of me talking and sharing and specifically pointing out things. And I don't think I'm sad and depressed and trying to show my highlights.
And I think that's a slightly different thing, because now you're bringing, it's not just, like, I don't think of selfies in video. I think of selfies as a still image. And I think
all of them are still the same, because you're still using the same, like, they
are you
point
not
out the
trying
criteria.
To show off? Are you not trying to show off your
surroundings?
I don't
think, but I'm also
you
not
are.
Trying to... I guess I am. Yeah, you're right.
Probably. In a way, you are
when I'm home, I'm bored and I don't bother like doing these.
Yeah, otherwise you would be doing my other argument, which is you were attempting to garner sympathy because you're home alone and bored. Mm-hmm. So,
well, what does it say about my socioeconomic status?
I'm not writing this paper. I did college already. I'm done. I'm just saying like these are the arguments that people are going to be making.
But there's also a very positive side of the class, Jaren, is that there's also a service aspect of it that isn't entirely self-involved, where they volunteer and help first-generation college applicants with their scholarship applications as well. And they try and show, and they're trying to also get the students involved with going beyond their just backgrounds of their own or their own circles, just to see kind of basically what it comes down to is selfie awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Using selfies to get awareness or to be more aware as well. So there's also very service-oriented aspect to this class. It's not just all self-indulgence.
I mean, it was only a matter of time until this happened because the way that concept of the selfie has taken off socially, there is going to be at some point, either in from a historical perspective or definitely psychology, people are going to start talking about it in that way because it is so through the heart of our current world, at least in the United States, and I imagine in many other countries. So, like I said, only a matter of time before people started to discuss the socioeconomic impact of such a thing. So that's cool.
Selfies as communication, Jaren.
I like the fact that people are now looking into it and talking more about it from a different perspective other than shooting them. I still absolutely despise doing them myself. But I am happy that other people are looking into the implications.
So, Jaren, are you telling me your selfie game ain't strong?
It's not strong at all.
It's not on fleek.
I might have one selfie of myself printed that's done. That's it. And that's only because there was no one to hold the camera. Like, I don't selfie constantly. I can't do it. It's not my thing.
That's okay. But you handed it to someone else. I still feel if you've commissioned someone, not really commissioned, but you've handed your phone to somebody, say, take a picture of me. It's not necessarily, yes, a selfie, but I feel the point of the class is saying is that you constructed, you basically self-produced, in our words, a little shoot of showing what things you want in the frame and where things are taken, and talking about, say, gender.
There is a totally different argument to be made of the differences between handing a camera to somebody else and doing it yourself, like actually making a selfie. I think
of course, I do believe that's
completely different. Yeah.
Well, I'm that person that takes those photos. Yeah, so that's why I wanted to talk about that. Yeah.
Let's wrap up with one thing. So Vincent Laforet, who has been in the news constantly lately.
Isn't he your favorite guy ever, Jaren?
I think Vincent is doing some great work in the sky. I think the photos that he's making are really nice. I just wish that I could tell the difference between one city or another without looking closely. Because I think maybe that's what makes you so successful is they have a very, very specific method that he's shooting them. So
I also think people also are a big fan of like city pride, like New York,
and it's the city pride and the fact that the photos don't look like any other photo taken from the sky. But in this particular thing, I don't want to talk specifically about air. I want to read just one paragraph from an interview he did where he talked about one specific thing. And
I'm going to just talk about who he spoke with. He spoke with Om Malik, a very fantastic tech reporter, where he just kind of bumped into him in South Park in San Francisco, where it's kind of very .com central. And I believe Laforet may have been sitting on a bench where he came across them and they had a little interview. And this was that interview. Go on, Jaren.
The paragraph I want to point out is, I'll read to you. Photojournalism will find a new home over time. This latest piece I did, Aerials over New York at Night, is an excellent example. I was a successful photojournalist for 15 plus years. I worked for every single outlet, New York Times, New York Times Magazine, Vanity Fair, National Geographic, etc. Eventually, I found that photography business was not a sustainable model for my family. So I went into filmmaking and directing commercials. And I want to look at this specifically because I think someone could read that and misinterpret it and think that he's saying that it was not a sustainable business model to have a family.
Well, we already know that. We know we have friends who are making a living as a photographer, commercial photographer.
But not photojournalists. I don't know any photojournalists. Like guys who shoot and do really well in that one area.
I do know a couple. I know a couple. LA Times and San Francisco Chronicle, I guess. Yeah. Or SF Gate, their online arm. But
What he's arguing,
but they don't have families. That's the thing, Jared. They don't have families.
He's not arguing that he didn't make enough money. He clearly said earlier that he was a successful photojournalist. What he's saying is that being a photojournalist is not conducive to having a family, and I can totally agree with this. Being a photojournalist is completely different than being something like a wedding or portrait photographer, or myself, a video producer or maker. He's saying that the lifestyle of being a good photojournalist is just not great for having other people in your life, and I can totally get that. Being a good photojournalist requires you to have ridiculously weird hours, going to places that on the drop of a hat, and just basically not being around. I bet he didn't spend a lot of time at home when he was a photojournalist, and you can't have a family if you're not spending time at home.
And for those that don't really quite understand or relate to this, did you watch the movie Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal, Jared?
I wanted to see that. I have not seen it yet.
I think you should see it, because I feel the point you just made is emphasized heavily in that movie, of just weird hours, on call, just got to get there, go, and it's all about the story above all else, above yourself, because once it's gone, once it's no longer novel, it's useless. It's no worth, no value.
And at that point, you probably moved on to two other stories that could possibly be novel again. So
if the only way a story even gets done, if it's going to be any good, is extreme hustle. And if you just if you don't even have that extreme hustle, it's gone. That's the only way to make anything.
Yeah. So that's the perfect storm of stuff to make it so for constant divorce. If you're ever in a family situation, like you just not being around, you being constantly stressed out, you being focused on your job all of the time. So that, I think, plays into why there might not be that many great photojournalists anymore. Mm-hmm. And that, combined with the fact that a lot of outlets are downplaying their photojournalists, I think this is all coming together to make it hard to do that. But I really respect anyone who still does photojournalism at its best. We'll be on the ground in dangerous situations and perfectly capturing the situations to share that with other people who would otherwise A, not want to be there, or B, never actually get to go there. So it's just worth noting that even LaFore is saying, like, it's just like, I don't think you can do it forever. I think you have to, you can do this as a bachelor or bachelor, like, I guess you can call a bachelorette, but do this for a short amount of time while you're young, and then find a way to transition to something that is more sustainable towards a more, what is considered quote unquote normal model for having a job.
And the way he's found that is through cinematography, videography. But before that, but remember, Jaren, when you, this is when you were on the show with Mike. I remember my show when I wasn't there.
That one time.
And you guys talked about how just being in this industry where you know, constantly are working on your own stuff, not necessarily hustling for something else, but you're hustling for yourself, that has not lent you guys a lot of time for relationships with friends.
And when I was, again, going to refer to Paul Markow, I was shooting with him, his assistant, Robert Humansky, he told me he just knows a ton of photographers in the Scottsdale, Phoenix area who are divorced. Because even though they're not photojournalists, they're just photographers, commercial photographers, it still takes a very special type of woman or man to stay with the other significant other while they're doing these jobs, which require them to be constantly out, not home a lot, working when they are home, that sort of thing. Like, it takes a lot of understanding. And that only gets, I think, exemplified or amplified, sorry, in when you're in photojournalism, which takes that to a whole different level, a whole nother level of crazy.
It would be nice if we had like a nice little panel, almost like The View, where it was like these wives and girlfriends of photographers and videographers and cinematographers.
And how they put up with it.
Yeah, because there's one behind you right there on your couch.
Yeah, she puts up with it.
Yes, and then we'd love to know how they put up with it and things that they care about, things that they know. I just thought it would be an interesting perspective.
Yeah, there are times where I'm not home for like a month. I mean, I sleep here a couple nights that month, but I'm traveling the rest of the time. And
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
tough.
I was gone for a week, Jaren, in Vegas, and I just got back like, two nights ago? And we were supposed to record yesterday, but now we're recording today. And because I don't have a significant other, it's not a big deal. And I'm like, it's easy for me to travel. But my boss, who does have a family, was having a much more harder time. And so I was, you know, trying to take off stuff of his plate and handle it, so that way he just felt a little bit more time to maybe even speak with his family or FaceTime with them.
Yeah. So on that note, I think what I'll end with, it's
love your family.
It's challenging.
Spend some time with them.
It's challenging to do what we do. Before it's too late. But you gotta, if you love it, you gotta do it. So All right, that is taking us right up until where I wanted to cut off. This is perfect. Our timing is right on. So thank you for joining us, guys. If you got any comments or questions, you can reach us on Twitter at Rewrap Podcast, and always find us at resourcemagonline.com. If you like what you hear, Caraminder, what should they do?
They should rate us on iTunes.
I don't know. I think we're going to say this every time.
Like, yes, please rate us on iTunes.
If you don't want to do that, then you should at least, very least, subscribe to our podcast so you get that every time we publish. And tell your friends to give us a listen. We would love to have more people, you know, tuning into this every week. So yeah, we really appreciate it.
And for those friends who actually do, like, maybe they leave a Facebook message and a comment, or they tweet at me, you know, I think Dave Geffen, who's up there with...
Speaking of LaFore.
Yeah, he's out up there shooting a lot of the behind-the-scenes video. Is actually shot by Dave Geffen, a friend in Brooklyn. And also Tony Roslin, who was listening. He quite enjoyed our show as well. So for those guys who actually just give us comments, thank you very much. We actually do really, really, really appreciate them. And if I had a chance to have an office where I could print them out and frame them, I would.
Keeps us going hearing those things.
Yes, it does. It's very... reinvigorating is what I was trying to say. Yeah.
Speaking of those tweets, if you want to tweet to Caraminder, he is at Caraminder. I am at Jaren Schneider. And this has been the Rewrap Podcast. We will see you all here next week. Thanks for joining us.
Episode 13, done.